Good morning. We're in Daf Tzadi Bet Amud Bet in the Ein Yaakov Mavor on page Ayin, letter Mem Tet. Tana Ranan. B'sha'a she'pil Nebuchadnezzar Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah l'Kibshana Esh. When Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel, threw Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah into the furnace, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. And in the dream, the dream was interpreted by Daniel that Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom would one day come to an end and be overthrown. So Nebuchadnezzar, to strengthen his reign, his grip on power, made an image. It's machlokas whether it was an idol. Made an image and required everyone to bow down to it. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah refused to bow down to it and were thrown into a furnace and were miraculously saved. So the Gemara says that at this time, same time that that happened, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yechezkel, Hashem said, Yechezkel, lech v'chayim ikim v'vik'at dura, go and revive the mesim in the valley of Dura. Kivan shechaya otam, so once Yechezkel revived them, ba'u atzamot v'tafchulo lotora shah shchik tamya al panav. So those bones came and slapped that Rasha, may his bones be ground up, on his face. Shchik, it's like, Yimach Shmo, may his bones be ground up, like Yimach Shmo. So those bones came and slapped him in the face. Amar, ma tivan shel elu. He said, what's this? What's going on here? Amru lo chavrehem shel elu mechayim itim v'gat dura. So he was told, the friend of these people, friend of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, is being mechayim mesim in v'gat dura, the valley of dura. Patach v'amar, Nebuchadnezzar opened up and said, pasuk in Daniel, atohi kama ravravin, his wonders, how many are there, v'timhoni kama takifin, and his or his signs, how many, and his wonders, how powerful, malchute malchut alam, his kingdom is a kingdom forever, speaking about Hashem, v'gomer, etc. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak said, yutzak zahav roteach l'toch piv shel Torah shah shchik tamya, may boiling gold be poured into the mouth of that Rasha, may his bones be ground up. Shomalei lo ba malachu sitaro al piv, if an angel had not come and slapped him in the face, b'kei sheganot kol shirot tushpachot shemar David b'sefer tehillim, he would have put to shame all of the praises of Sefer Tehillim. His praises would have been seemingly greater than the praises of Sefer Tehillim. That is the Gemara. Rashi says, on page Ayin, the second Rashi, Ba'u Atzamot, Min Habika, the bones came from the valley, V'tafchulo lo Torah shal panav v'chulahem, they slapped him in the face and they left, they went away. V'it Amri, some say, Shemiotan Atzamot Yilo Kelim, some say that he had, a mug made out of bone, of Jewish bones, and when Yechezkel did Chesamesim, Tachulo Panav, he picked up his mug to drink his coffee, and all of a sudden they came back to life. His mug came to life and slapped him in the face. This is pottery. Okay, next Rashi. Chavrehem shel elu mechayim etim al Yechezkel yomrim, the friend of these people. Referring to Yechezkel, Shayach Chaver Shel Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He was a colleague, contemporary of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Nebuchadnezzar Yodea Shakadosh Baruch Hu Mechayim Etim. Nebuchadnezzar knew it was Hashem who was Mechayim Etim. So let's just finish the Rashi. Patach V'Amar. We'll come back to this Rashi in a minute. Patach V'Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu. He said to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Tohi kam ravrin pasuku. It's a pasuk in Daniel. Or Gimel, pasuk lam and Gimel. Okay. So what does Rashi mean Rashi says, they told him that these people's friends is being Mechayim Mesim, but Nebuchadnezzar knew it was Hashem. What exactly is Rashi telling us? So we had a week or two ago when we were talking about I think it was last Tuesday, about the dry bones, told you the explanation of the Parashas Drachim. He asked, why did Hashem choose Rishayim to be L'chaim Esim? And he said Hashem wanted to prove that we are that the Jews in Golos said we're no longer Hashem's children. We're Hashem's slaves. He sold us. We're for free. And Hashem wanted to say, no, you're my children, and I'm a Kohen, and I can be Matami Mesim to my children in order to bring you back. So he said that actually in the context of explaining our Gemara. He starts with some questions. This is in Parshat Drachim, Drush Chamisha Vesrim, 25, my edition on page Resh Samech Zayin. He says, what did Hashem do this miracle for? What did it have to do with Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah?
The miracle of?
Of Tchias HaMesim. But why did he do it right now? What does it have to do with Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah? And what is Rashi telling us when he says Nebuchadnezzar knew it was Hashem? If he knew, why did he ask? And what exactly was the whole conversation about? So after he explains what I just told you about why Hashem chose these people for Tchias HaMesim to prove that we are Hashem's children, so he says that now we can understand this Gemara and Rashi as well. What was Nebuchadnezzar thinking? He's understanding that the image that Nebuchadnezzar made was Avodah Zarah. I said it's a machlokas, but he's understanding that it was Avodah Zarah. And why did he think that he could force the Jews to bow down to an idol? He says, Nebuchadnezzar rasha haya v'lo tipesh. He was evil, but he wasn't dumb. Okay. How did he think he was going to get away with this? So he says that just like the Jewish people thought that Hashem had abandoned them, Nebuchadnezzar thought Hashem had abandoned them, had abandoned the Jewish people. He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, he exiled them, and they finished. And the connection between Hashem and the Jewish people has been severed. Okay. And so, therefore, he could force the Jews to bow down to his idol because they don't belong to Hashem anymore. Now they belong to him. So the entire purpose of Yechezkel being Mechayim Mesim was to disprove that. Right? So specifically at this time, yeah.
Sorry, is he saying that Nebuchadnezzar thinks that the Jews are his, they bow down to him? In other words, they serve him or they serve the idol?
He could, the idol represented him, but he could, that's why I say it's a machlokas, whether it was Avodah Zarah or not, but he's learning it was Avodah Zarah, but it was an Avodah Zarah that represented Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar's, his purpose was to counteract the Nevuah that had told him that his kingdom was going to end. So he said, he created this Avodah Zarah to, thinking it was going to counteract that because everyone in the world would have to bow down to it and that would solidify his kingdom. So the whole purpose, as we explained, the whole purpose of Yechezkel's Tchias HaMesim was to prove that we are Hashem's children. And so that came right now to counteract Nebuchadnezzar's thinking that we are not Hashem's children. So when these bones came back to life and came and slapped him in the face, he said, what's going on here? And his advisor said, oh, don't worry. There's some Jew out there who's playing around with these dead bones and making them come back to life. But it's not significant. Don't worry about it. Okay. But Rashi's telling us, so that's what Gemara is saying. Arulo chavarim shel elu b'chei meitim. Rashi's telling us, Nebuchadnezzar wasn't that dumb. Okay. It says, as Parsha Strachim says, he was a Rasha, but he wasn't dumb. Okay. Nebuchadnezzar understood that it wasn't Yechezkel playing around with the bones. It was Hashem who was Mechayim Mesim. And therefore he got the message, and he started praising Hashem. And so the Gemara says that the praises that he would have said would have outdone the praises of Tehillim. And so Malach came and slapped him in the face to stop him. The Parashat Strachim says that since he recognized, even though his advisors were telling him, oh, this is all a man doing this stuff, and Nebuchadnezzar recognized that it was Hashem, so at that moment he was on a very high level, and he could have outshone David HaMelech. The question is then, if he could have, then why wasn't he allowed to? Why wasn't he allowed to realize his potential? So we'll come back to that in a minute. Marsha says, addresses a few points in this Gemara, including that question. Marsha says, Patach v'amar, he opened up and he said, how many are Hashem's signs? Marsha says, Hu ha'ot v'aneis shochanani mishal v'azariah, shnisum v'kivshana esh. So the otohi, the signs, refers to the miracle of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah being saved from the fire. And Timhohi, Kama Takifin, how powerful are his wonders, Uchmiatam al Shemachem Etim, that refers to Tchias HaMesim. Vainu Kama Takifin, Shubalashana Targum Gvura, Takif, he says, Timhohi, Kama Takifin, Takif has wonders, how Takif are they? Takif is Aramaic for Gvura, for power. And we know that Gvura is connected with Tchias HaMesim. The second bracha of Shemoneh Esrei is called Gvuros, and it mentions Tchias HaMesim several times. Ata gibor l'olam Hashem mechayim mitim terav loshia. You are gibor, you are mechayim mesim. Mashkiv ata gibor l'olam Hashem mechayim mitim. Mesayim achutei machut alam, and then he concluded his kingdom is a kingdom forever. V'shaltanei b'chol dar, and his dominion is in every generation. Rem is a whole door of dormin olam vad olam. The reference brings Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon, that it's a reference to Dora Mabul and Dora Flaga and Mitzrayim, and Hashem does wonders in every generation. Uvadai shamar kein l'derech klal b'chol dor v'dor v'yadato l'feresh v'l'saper derech prat mem shaltos shakadosh b'chush v'chol dor v'dor. So, presumably, or certainly, what he was planning was, he said, Hashem's wonders are great in every generation, and then he was going to go on and say, in the Dor HaMabul he did this, and Dor HaPlaga he did this, and he was going to go into details, and that's when the Malach stopped him. El Shabam Malach Ustaro Kadei Shlo Yifrei Tishbachto Ugdolto Shekadosh Baruch Hu, so that he should not spell out the greatness of Hashem, Shlo Yganebem Shor Tishbachot Shamar David, so that he should not put to shame David HaMelech's praises. In other words, Marsha is answering, where do we see that Nebuchadnezzar was going to say anything else? But the fact that he said Hashem does wonders in every generation, we can infer that he was then going to go out and spell out what Hashem does in every generation. And why did Hashem not want that to happen? Because the Ein Ra'ui Shamachriv Shu Nebuchadnezzar Yosif Shirat Al Boneh. Baruch Hu Shu David. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed what David built. David started the building of the Beis HaMikdash. His son Shlomo finished it, but we consider David to be one of the builders of the Beis HaMikdash, and Nebuchadnezzar destroyed it. And it wouldn't be right for Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, to steal the limelight from David, who built the Beis HaMikdash. And then he goes on to another point. Now it seems that the Malach understood the praise. It says a Malach came and slapped him. He must have understood. But that's a problem. Nebuchadnezzar was speaking Aramaic. Daniel is one of two books of Tanakh that are written in Aramaic. The other one is Ezra. Nebuchadnezzar was speaking Aramaic. Malachim don't understand Aramaic. Gemara says that a person should not daven in Aramaic because Malachim don't understand Aramaic. So how did the Malach come and slap him? How did he know what he was saying? So he answers, that's why we say Kaddish in Aramaic, such a lofty praise. We want it to go directly to Hashem and not to go through the, you know, through the handlers and the secretaries and, you know, so to speak, go directly to Hashem. So he says, Yeshamar Hainu Malachim of Katragim Israel. Maybe only Malachim who speak, prosecute against Israel do not speak Aramaic. Valhamalamdim Zchut Israel ki hacha, but Malachim who speak praises of Israel, but I'm Vinim Macholashan, they speak every language. That's the Marsha says. Iyun Yaakov comments on the Marsha that the Marsha momentarily forgot a Gemara in Sota, because it's not a question. He says that the Gemara there says even so to speak good Malachim who speak good of the Jewish people don't speak Aramaic. Okay? But the Marsha's Kasha is not a Kasha, because this Malach was Gavriel, and Gavriel we know speaks all the languages. Okay? Because the Gemara says in Psachim that the Malach who came to save Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah was Gavriel, and Gavriel was the Malach who came and taught Yosef the 70 languages. We know Gavriel speaks all the languages. So the Marsha must have temporarily forgotten that. That's he says. The I'm sorry. Go ahead.
When you're in a pause.
Yeah.
So why we have a thought that our tefillot have to go through Malachi? That our tefillot we dive in directly to Hashem without intermediaries.
The Malachim, should rephrase that. The Malachim are trying to grab our tefillos, just like if you would try to go talk to the President of the United States, there would be all the Secret Service agents and handlers who would be there to try to stop you to decide if you're worthy of speaking to the President of the United States. So the Malachim are, standing between us and Hashem, checking out our tefillos. Did we daven with kavana? Do we speak lashon hara? And did we have unclean mouths? Do we deserve to have our tefillos get to Hashem? So the Marsha said that the reason Nebuchadnezzar wasn't permitted to say praises was because he destroyed what David built. We're not going to let him outshine David. Ein Eliyahu. Elaborates on this a little bit. And he says, first of all, what's this idea of boiling gold? Why gold? And why did Malach slap him? Several other questions. So he says that have a machlokas in the Gemara. Who is greater? One who is not commanded to do a mitzvah and does it, or one who is commanded to do a mitzvah and does it? So we hold that one who is commanded to do a mitzvah and does it is greater because he has a yetzirah. Someone's not commanded, the yetzirah doesn't try to stop him. The Rav Moshe Feinstein writes regarding women putting on tefillin. He says when a man wakes up in the morning, cold winter morning, a man wakes up to go to shul. He wants to, you know, curl up, pull the quilt up over his head, go back to sleep. Okay. I don't think snooze buttons have been invented yet, but he could have, Moshe could have mentioned the snooze button. The Yetzer Hara doesn't want us to get up and daf put on tefillin, daven, and learn. Okay. So Moshe says, these women who are so eager to put on tefillin, the Yetzer Hara doesn't seem to be bothering them. I have to wonder where they're coming from. You know, is it truly L'shem Shemai? But anyway, that's an aside about Mitzuvah V'Oseh versus Eino Mitzuvah V'Oseh. So Eino Eliyahu says, our Gemara is going according to the opinion that Eino Mitzuvah V'Oseh is greater. Someone who's not commanded is greater. Since David HaMelech is commanded to praise Hashem, Nebuchadnezzar is not commanded to praise Hashem. One of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach is not to curse Hashem, but he could stay quiet his whole life. He doesn't have to praise Hashem as long as he doesn't curse Hashem. So he's not commanded to praise Hashem, and therefore his praises would have been greater than the praises of David HaMelech, who is commanded to praise Hashem. However, he was unworthy. He was a Machtia Terabim. He's someone who caused other people to sin by making them bow down to his idol. He doesn't deserve, say in Pirkei Avos, that if somebody causes other people to sin, he doesn't deserve to do tshuva. So the Malachim didn't want him to be able to praise Hashem, to come closer to Hashem, for two reasons. One, there are two reasons why his praises would have outshined David HaMelech's. One, because he's not commanded, and David HaMelech was commanded. And two, because he would have been a Baal Tshuva. And he didn't deserve to be a Baal Tshuva because he caused other people to sin. He says that in Kabbalah, gold is a reference to din. We'll have to take his word for that. But the color gold, or the metal gold, represents din, just strict justice. And there are two kinds of justice. There's strict justice and lighter justice, and din kasheh and din rafia. Okay. Those concepts exist. Boiling gold is din kasheh. It's the strictest form of justice. And the Malachim demanded that Nebuchadnezzar be judged by the strictest form of justice. And that's the idea of pouring the boiling gold down his throat. I don't know. Consult your local Orthodox Mekubel. Brought down the name of the Kutzker. That another explanation for why Nebuchadnezzar was not allowed to compete with David HaMelech for praising Hashem. In fact, he wasn't able to. When the Gemara says that his praises would have outshined those of David HaMelech, it means from a literary, poetic point of view, they would have looked better. The poetry critic of the New York Times would have said, Nebuchadnezzar's praises, they're so much better than David's. Tehillim is, in fact, kind of disjointed at times. There doesn't seem to be, certainly between chapters, and as Malvin points out, even within chapters, there often doesn't seem to be a flow from the beginning to the end. They seem to be, Malvin says, one of the challenges of explaining Tehillim. We talked last week about the Malvin's point of view that in Tanakh, every single word is there for a reason. And Malvin says, I'm going to explain Tehillim exactly the way I explained the rest of Tanakh, using the same principles. Everything is there for a reason. There's no duplication. Every word or phrase expresses a unique idea. But it's going to be hard, Malvin says, because Tehillim is very strangely worded and at times disjointed from one pasuk to the next. or even from one phrase to the next, and certainly from one parak to the next. So from the point of view of a literary critic, okay, Nebuchadnezzar could have done better than David HaMelech. But why was it not allowed to happen? So he says in Yiddish, I'll read it in Yiddish, I'll translate it, the Malach said to him, pardon my accent, I'm not a native Yiddish speaker, but du willst sagen Shira mit a Kroin auf den Kopf? You want to sing praise to Hashem with a crown on your head? Ich will hören wie azoi du willst sagen Shira noch a Patsch. I want to hear if you can sing Shira after you've been beaten up a little bit. Because David HaMelech, we have this image of David HaMelech sitting in a beautiful pastoral context, a field with a sheep strumming away in his harp. That's not how David's life was. David was constantly suffering. And the Rav Hirsch writes in his introduction to Tehillim on page XIII, David's whole personality, Rav Hirsch wrote in German, so this is translated pretty literally from German, which makes makes it interesting. But David's whole personality and entire course of his life rendered him well qualified to carry out this task, which entailed the moral and spiritual guidance of his people for all times to come, a task for which the Spirit of God had awakened and elected him. From the time when misunderstood even by his closest kin, he tended sheep in the fields, down to the moment when, as founder of an immortal dynasty, he came to the end of his trial-filled life, there was hardly an instant in the development of his emotional life nor any situation in his active, variegated career when he did not have to prove himself. What he's referring to here when he says misunderstood even by his closest kin, when Shmuel HaNavi came, Hashem told Shmuel, go to the house of Yishai and anoint one of his sons as king. So Yishai had 8 sons. And and when Shmuel told Yishai, bring me your sons, Yishai only brought the 7 oldest ones. He didn't think for a minute that Shmuel meant David. He brought the 7 oldest sons, and each one of them Hashem rejected. And Shmuel says, do you have any more children? And Yishai says, well, I have one more. But you can't possibly mean him. And Shmuel says, bring him. And lo and behold, to everyone's surprise, that's what we say in Hallel. David HaMelech said in Hallel, Evan Masua Bonim Aital Rosh Pinah, the stone that the builders disparaged, gave up on, turned out to be the cornerstone. He's referring to himself. Nobody ever imagined David HaMelech could be the anointed one of Hashem. He was just his whole life, like that poster. I just hang around to see what happens next. That was David HaMelech's life. Nevertheless, Rav Hirsch continues, David tested and experienced all the bitterness which the struggle with a nature not entirely immune to error, resulting awareness of guilt and the fight against ingratitude, envy, slander, and persecution can possibly infuse into the cup of life. But David knew how to utilize every moment of both joy and affliction as a means of striving upward before the Lord to clarity of thought and purity of resolve and conviction. And he could turn his every thought and emotion into a song born by the strains of his harp. It was for this reason that he could leave such creations of his spirit to his people as an eternal heritage, so that the minds and spirits of both the individual and the nation throughout the ages to come, and notwithstanding the changes time might bring, might be able to fight their way through the same struggle, to strive after the same clarity of thought, and to be inspired to attain the same purity of conviction and resolve. That is what Rav Hirsch says, which is the same idea that's brought in the name of the Kotzker. He brings here, this is Kotzker was a Hasidic Rebbe and died, I think, in 1859. And he was known to be very sharp. He did not write anything. So there are very short thoughts brought in his name. And this is a commentary on them by one of his descendants, Rav Menachem Tzvi Kalish, son of the Amshanova Rebbe, and a descendant of the Kotzker Rebbe. So he brings here that the Vilna Gaon says that we have multiple words for song, Shira and Zimra, two different words. The Psuke de Zimra, the Psukim of song. What's the difference between Shira and Zimra? So the Vilna Gaon says that Zimra is singing in a specific situation. It could be a sad situation, but it's a specific situation. And the person might feel sadness when he's singing. Shira is a song that bursts forth from the person's innermost depths, where he's always happy. Deep down, the person who has emuna, bitachon, is always happy. So Zimra is a more superficial song that may come from sadness. Shira comes from the place inside where a person is always happy. And David HaMelech's Tehillim are Shira. They are that is what they were. So Nebuchadnezzar, he was happy right now. He was on top of the world. But let's give him a good slap and see if he can still praise Hashem. David HaMelech, we know where his songs came from. The Sefer HaToda'ah, available in English as it's called Book of Our Heritage, something like that. So in section of Shavuos, he elaborates a bit on the same idea that Kutzker alludes to and that Hirsch wrote about. He says that David says, he picks a few examples from Tehillim, focusing first on Perek Samech Tet of Tehillim. Ushieni Elokim kibau mayim ad nafesh. Save me, Hashem. The waters have come up to my soul. I'm drowning. I'm drowning in sorrow. He says, Lo chas v'shalom v'litzotein. This is not poetry. This is not just figure of speech. It's not exaggeration. Only a person who doesn't have Yirat Shamayim would go in front of Hashem and say, God, I'm drowning. When, you know, he stubbed his finger. Goes, God, help me, I'm drowning. Okay. clearly, that's not the way a person with Yirat Shamayim talks. And so if David would say, save me, God, because I'm drowning, he must have meant it. He goes on in Tehillim Samach Tet, Rabu misarot roshi sunai chinam. Those who hate me for nothing are more than the hairs of my head on my head. He says a person has 20,000 or 30,000 hairs on his head. David's saying there are more than that people who hate me for nothing. and yet we know that when David, people tried to kill David, David had mercy on them. Right? Shaul tried to kill David. David had multiple opportunities to kill Shaul, and he never did. But nevertheless, he cried out to Hashem that there are this many people who are trying to kill me. He continues, Muzar ha'iti l'achi v'nochri l'vnei imi. I was a stranger, l'achai. I was a stranger to my brothers and to the children of my mother. Okay. the Sefer Todah says that the greatest pain that a person could suffer is to be a stranger to his family. If his own family rejects him, Rav Eisenman in his commentary on Eov brings, I don't remember in whose name or whether it's his own, says that according to the opinion, there's a Mahalakos in the Gemara when Eov lived or if he lived at all, and there's an opinion that it's a mashal, never happened. So he asks, according to the opinion, it's a mashal, why did Eov have a wife? In the story, why does Eov have a wife? If it's a true story, it's a true story. But if it's not a true story, why does he have a wife? And he says that the greatest, all the things that happened to Eov, his children died, he lost his money. Right? Incidentally, there's an opinion that his children didn't really die. The Malach told him his children died. But it wasn't true. Okay? But the greatest suffering that could happen to a person is for his own wife to turn against him, right? As Eov's wife does. So that's to make the mashal complete. So Sefer Todah is saying, David said, my own brothers, they abandoned me. Okay. It's the greatest suffering that could happen to a person is for his family to turn against him. He goes on and more illustrations of David, whether David could marry into Kal Yisrael, descendant of a Moabite woman, and so on. All the suffering, his sons rebelled against him twice. Learn Tanakh and see lots of that. And nevertheless, he was able to speak all of these praises of Hashem. While we're talking about Rav Hirsch's introduction to Tehillim, mentions an interesting point. Grammatically, the word Tehillah, praise, is feminine. Plural of it should be Tehillot, not Tehillim. Yet we call it Tehillim. The Malbim, in fact, when he published his commentary, he changed the name of the book to Tehillot. Rav Hirsch comments on why do we call it Tehillim when it should be called Tehillot? He says, may we make one further comment with regard to the title Sefer Tehillim with which the Book of Psalms has been handed down to us. We might have expected that the title be Sefer Tehillot. However, we also do not call our Tefillin Tefillot, but designate them with the masculine plural form of Tefillin, corresponding to the Hebrew word Tefillim. Tefillin is Aramaic. Tefillim would be Hebrew. We don't call them Tefillot. This was done most probably to draw a fine distinction, namely to show that they are not Tefillot, arrangements of thought and judgment in themselves, but only means to be employed for that purpose. They will become tefillot only if, even as we utter them, we will incorporate their contents fully into our own hearts and minds. In like manner, the written or printed words of the Psalms are not tehillot per se. They are simply tehillim, only means to tehillot. They will become tehillot only once their contents will have filled our hearts and minds, will have been given living expression through our lips. That is Rav Hirsch's explanation. Stop there. Have a good day.